Welcome to another episode of Desert Talk. This is a new fucking phase for me, I think. I don't think that much will change with this podcast, with Desert Talk. But, the format has always been incredibly loose and unpredictable and, you know, just me sort of meandering through thoughts that just happen to come up, stream of consciousness, you know? But a lot of my time, most of my time this week has been spent either recording or editing my other podcast, my new one, called I'm Not a Fan Unless I Have a Podcast, which is all about, me and, that was a Freudian thing. Cause like it is my biggest, accomplishment this year, I think. I think even more than the EP that I wrote and recorded. It's weird because I'm talking with guests, with a different guest every episode, and I'm releasing multiple episodes a week, and just two a week, but recording like five plus a week. And that leaves me sort of drained. It leaves me drained with, just because like I've been talking and like I've been, really exercising my conversation muscle in my brain. And it's weird. Like I find myself exhausted by the, if I've done one of these podcast episodes, consecutive days, like three consecutive days, that the one after that, like if I try to go for a fourth consecutive day, it sucks. The episode doesn't suck, but like I just have nothing left to really say that's new. I feel like it's a lot easier for my conversations to stay. Ugh, burped. I'm super acidic right now. Got coffee. But I feel like it's just easier for them to stay, for my conversations to stagnate if I'm not bringing anything new to the table all the time. And some of this, I think, is just a matter of that. It's just a matter of me getting too in my head and like wanting to have just a mind-blowing episode every time. But at the same time, I also think there is something to this. Like, I should do the audience a favor and, maybe slow down a little bit on the production of that podcast. Even though it's, by slowing down production, all I mean is just, giving myself a little more room to breathe and, I guess like I've kind of been aware of this from the get-go, because like this, I was aware this was a big undertaking, because originally I was going to have that podcast be just a single or maybe two episodes of Desert Talk, just to talk about, just to talk with these other, random King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard fans, just to talk about Red Rocks and how we, because like, I had tickets to see this band, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, at Red Rocks and also at the Greek Theater in Berkeley, where they're going to be playing 3-hour marathon sets, three different nights with different set lists. And so I wanted to, share my, just how gutted I was with these other people and just like get you, the Desert Talk audience, which I think consists of, maybe one or two people beyond Mark. just in recording, like after I got done with the first conversation, I realized like this can be its own podcast. you know, why would I try to up listenership for Desert Talk if it's only this one thing that I would be getting more listenership with? So I decided to start the new, you know, a new podcast just for that. And it's been really, really fun. But, you know, right. So my point with that is I knew it had the potential to be one of those things where it was more than I could, where I bit off more than I could chew. And I've been cognizant of that possibility all along. And I think I've finally, you know, or I don't know if I finally reached the point of realizing where, you know, where my limit is, but I'm getting a better idea of it. So it's, yeah, it's interesting. It's also interesting, just going from this understanding of online mobs of being, because like my perception of people online is usually that they're people I don't want to fuck with. I mean, you know, not because I'm afraid of them. It's just like usually these people that are vocal online are a complete waste of my time. They're also a waste of your time, but a lot of people fail to realize that. They get really amped up by people that are clearly trolling, and then try to have some sort of like moral high ground and you know, condemn them or virtue signal or do whatever you do that doesn't have any fucking effect on trolls because they're trolls. Just like nothing affects the president. The president is a troll. Dave Chappelle pointed that out on Saturday Night Live, right after the election. He was just like, we elected an internet troll as president. And I don't think anybody really took the time to understand what that fucking means. That means, yeah, he is not going to be held accountable. He will not let himself be held accountable for anything because he doesn't give a fuck and he just wants to just fuck things up for the sake of fucking things up while also achieving a bit of a personal gain because, you know, online trolls typically have no conscience. Yeah, I mean, because you see the effects of online trolls and it's like, yeah, everything's like people are suffering and people are dying. So, and then you have like all these fucking, Reopen America bots that are on Twitter, you know, all these, like, a fucking report came out yesterday that said that nearly half or maybe more than half or exactly half, somewhere around that 50% mark, of these Reopen America hashtags on Twitter are from bot accounts, meaning that somebody or several trolls have set up these robot accounts to spew misinformation and really disinformation to fuck things up even more than they already are. And so it's just fucking frustrating when I see people like write shit like Scamdemic or promote that fucking hack film Plandemic. And you know, I know I've alluded on this podcast before to the possibility of an authoritarian takeover of government in the wake of this pandemic. That I think is still plausible. You know, there's a difference between believing all conspiracy theories and entertaining a few of them. Huge fucking difference. You know, so like, even though I think it's important to be vigilant and make sure that there isn't government overreach, in the wake of this, you know, under the guise of protecting people, I do think that with all the social distancing, wearing masks, and not reopen, like basically valuing human life over the economy, I believe in that. I think because that is a, I mean, it's just a fucking obvious thing. When there's a disease that is killing tens of thousands and close to hundreds of thousands of people. One of my friends from college, her dad died 3 weeks ago from COVID-19. This thing isn't a, like, it's not a fucking joke. He was in the hospital for the better part of a month, fighting really, really hard. And I mean, it's Jeffrey Gurian, comedian and a comedian's best friend in New York. Same thing with him, except he lived. And it's, I mean, it's just a fucking miracle that he lived. He had a host of underlying conditions, and the fact that he's, you know, in his, I think late 60s, you know, it's a fucking miracle that he made it. And, you know, but I shouldn't be the one convincing you that this is a real thing. And you shouldn't even need to be convinced that this is a real thing. But there are just so many fucking gullible people that are completely incapable of critical thinking. And this is exposing that just head on, full on. But on the flip side, it's also exposing just how fucked our government is. That they are completely beholden to corporations and the donor class, and that they don't give a fuck about people. I we've known that's true for a while, but like now it's really shown itself as such. I don't know where I was going with that, but I know where this is going to lead. Obviously, is going to be me talking about Joe Biden's latest slip up, and now I'm still going to run around with my thumb in my ass, being like I'm voting Biden. Just going to really super glue my thumb inside my rectum, just get in there, and vote for Biden. Because that's the only option. And I mean, the thing with, so if you didn't hear about this, Joe Biden went on this other podcast. I don't even know what it's called, The Breakfast Club. I've heard of it, don't really know anything about it other than it's a largely black audience. And the guy Charlemagne, I think that's his name, he hosts it, and he's black, and he wanted to talk with Joe Biden about what his campaign would do for Black America, because they're the ones that gave him just the major victory in South Carolina, and really gave him all the momentum that he needed to seal the nomination. And Biden just completely fucked it up. It's just a major disconnect between generations, it's just everything. Because, like, I haven't talked with my mom about this yet. And, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. What he said, what Joe Biden said was, if you ain't black, If you don't vote for me, then you ain't black. That's what he said. And it's like, just like, I know what he was trying to say, and I think we all agree with what he was trying to say. But how it came off was him just being like, look, I know you have no choice, so you have to vote for me. I forget who it was. I was listening to another podcast or an interview or something. maybe it was even a comment on a Facebook post, but somebody said that Joe Biden is like the guy who wants to get the thing without doing any of the work. And he just has a smile the whole time, which that's exactly what his smile says. Like, just that thing that, like, it just looks like his face is being pulled back, like held in place with pins or something. And just the way, because it's like, why are you smiling in basically any situation in which we see that you're smiling? Joe Biden is just so disconnected from reality. And people are, and then of course, like, the Democratic base was like, you need to apologize. It's like, can you not? Apologies don't fucking matter. They don't work, for one thing. And also, have you noticed how the only people demanding apologies or issuing apologies are Democratic? You ever, like, the Republicans don't give a fuck about any of this. In fact, that might have helped Joe Biden gain traction from moderates and from, never Trump Republicans, which are, you know, few and far between, but they exist. And maybe they aren't few and far between. We don't know, because, you know, most people don't vote. But maybe just stop with the apologies. Stop apologizing for shit. We can't beat an internet troll, malignant narcissist with a dementia patient who apologizes for things. Because then he's just gonna, like, me trying to figure out what the Democratic Party's plan is to win the election, me trying to process that is like Joe Biden trying to put together a sentence that doesn't just, where he doesn't have to put his foot in his fucking mouth right afterward. Holy fuck, it's outrageous. Just since when did, I've had grandparents pass from dementia and they never apologized for anything, while they had dementia. And I thought that was great. This is a really dumb point, so I will stop making it. But that's is the nature of stream of consciousness. Who the fuck knows? God, what am I even trying to do? Like I've been largely not following the news just because it's such a waste of energy. God, I got like these really acidic hiccups, burps. It's like I would just let out a belch because this is my own podcast with hardly any listenership. But every time something comes up, I'm worried that it's, that I'm going to vomit. So, yeah, that's the nature of acid burps. What the fuck else? I've been, as I mentioned, I've been doing a ton of podcasting, and one of the podcasts that I did this week was not my own. I did my friend Christy Belich's podcast. It's called The Firewolf Podcast. That's THEE Firewolf Podcast with Christy Belich. And we had like it's about a 2-hour long episode. And we talk about just a lot of things from my mushroom trip that I had a week and a half ago. And we also were talking about a storytelling show that we're going to produce together. And we're still figuring out the specifics and all the details. and just how, and the logistics of how it would work and where we would host it. And, but it's a really, I think this is a really good idea. It's not totally original or new anyway, but it's very fitting for this, for what we find ourselves in here. I mean, just think about this. The number one, the need for it. Something that has been really coming up, really coming to the surface of the collective consciousness, I think, is just the fact that many of us, if not most, or nearly all, have been having way more interesting dreams since quarantine began, and specifically beginning like in late April, because that's for me, that's when I've had some of my most, that's when my dreams started to get really fucking deep and fascinating. And like, I'm always a dreamer, like I've always got dreams, and like, I usually sleep, you know, I usually get 8 hours of sleep a night. I'm good about that. I'm pretty vigilant about how much sleep I get. And, but I noticed in late April, that's when my dreams started getting really, really interesting, and vivid. And apparently that's, a lot of other people have been having that, either stuff they've been posting on Facebook, or then you also see, I've seen some of these, some of this stuff being talked about in articles from the mainstream media. And I think it makes complete logical sense. Yeah. Like if you were deprived of, you know, interpersonal connection, your mind is going to run wild and basically try and reconfigure itself to adapt to these new circumstances. And like, you know, basically, you know, just like I my favorite mobile game, MLB Nine Innings. Since there's no MLB season, they have all these little engagement things, these little events that they have going on inside the app to keep people in. And I feel that's kind of like what our dreams are. It's a way to, still spark our interest in ourselves. It's a way to keep us going, to keep us living. And, you know, I think it's to help us adapt to these new, this new kind of life. You know, where we don't get to hug people and we don't have, a lot of face-to-face interaction. And there's, you know, if you're, yeah, I mean, you just don't, everybody's brain chemistry is getting pretty fucked up right now. Just because of the implication, just because of the implications of the situation. Yeah, so I don't know how the fuck I got onto this, idea of dreams, but, I've been working on this. So Christy and I, we talked on our podcast about, this idea of storytelling. I remember where I was going now. So with all these dreams that we've been having to basically reconfigure our own mentalities, and brain chemistry, just inherently all of what you dream is based on subconscious memories and sometimes very conscious memories. And now that we have all of this, all these memories coming to the surface, that's one thing that's been keeping me going, is just having memories, really just focusing on and being grateful for all these memories that I have of like life and living and, you know, living in, you know, within the confines of the Matrix. Like, it was, I mean, it's just such a fascinating, it's been a fascinating thing to me. And I've, you know, just all this reflection on my life and, you know, how my parents raised me and everything. Like I've been thinking about all that stuff. And naturally, when you think about memories, that turns into stories. That turns into storytelling. And I think what we're all experiencing, like ever since I had that little realization, like toward the end of April, you know, around the time that my dreams started getting extra vivid, I've noticed just this theme of storytelling and stories and how much people want to hear stories, and they really want to, and people love hearing other people's stories and just like having, because it gives them a fantasy of something that was happening concurrently to something they were doing. You know, it was happening at the same time, and they had no idea at the time, but now we're grasping at anything we can to give us a sense of normalcy, community, and imagination. And I think storytelling is a really, really good way to do that. And I think it's, you know, like you see these dystopian films and TV shows, you know, like these savagely humans gathered around a campfire, you know, post-apocalypse, and they just tell stories, just like, oh, this one time, and it's cheesy until you actually find yourself in a similar situation. Obviously, we did not experience the apocalypse. We are not living in a post-apocalyptic, you know, reality, but we are in the midst of a very uncertain time, and things are definitely changing. And I think that stories are still just as relevant and important to our mental health and entertainment and society functioning, as it would be in the event of an apocalypse, or, you know, a post-apocalyptical society. And I know this isn't totally coherent, but point is, I'm starting a storytelling show, and it's going to be just with a few people within the community. And we're gonna sort of treat it like This Is Not Happening, which is if you're not familiar with This Is Not Happening, it's a Comedy Central YouTube series where comedians tell true stories that pertain to a certain theme. You know, so like one theme would be death, and then you have, you know, like Doug Stanhope goes on, talks about this whole long story, and it's with a guy dying. And, you know, that's just one example, but like, those sets, like if you find yourself being like, holy fuck, he's absolutely right about storytelling, and you want to hear some really good stories, search for This Is Not Happening on YouTube. And, I mean, there are so many, you really can't go wrong with any of them, but one of the, I mean, just go with any Joey Diaz story. You're not going to regret it. I mean, he's just I think he's the best storyteller, that we have. But you know, there are also a lot of other good ones. Jim Brewer, another incredible storyteller. And he also has a This Is Not Happening it's pretty long. Jim Brewer's is like 19 minutes, but it is so worth that amount of time. I've watched it probably about 10 times. It's just the funniest fucking story. Totally true. And I think it's important that we bring that type of show to small communities around the country and probably around the world. And in my community, in the desert, it would be perfect. There is tons of open land where we can have this thing. And basically the format that we're thinking for this, for the storytelling show, you know, everything's unplugged. You know, we're not going to be anywhere where there's an outlet. And the idea is we all, you know, gather 6 feet apart from each other, at least, you know, bring some folding chairs, gather around in a circle. Or if you're like me and you're going to be too lazy to, or not too lazy, but too cheap to buy a folding chair, you know, I plan on standing on top of my car, or maybe just sitting on the hood or sitting on top of it. That's what I plan to do. And, you know, I have a good voice. I can project and everything, but because we want to stay safe. I'm getting ahead of myself. So that's the arrangement. That's how each person is situated in the show. Anybody is free to share a story. Everybody is invited to share a story, a piece of poetry, spoken word. It could be a song too, but our idea is to, you know, have a different theme every week, and have the show once a week, or maybe once every other week. Something that's consistent, but also not too frequent. We don't want to burn people out. But there would be a different theme for every show, and people would basically have the floor for as much time as they want. You know, up to 15 minutes, I think that's fair. We don't want these never ending long rambling stories like I give to you on my podcast, because that's what podcasts are for. But with these in-person stories, I think it's a really good way to spark creativity within the community. And it gives people a chance to connect with each other in person, because that is something that has been sorely missing in all of our lives. Like, you know, whether you're somebody who's just like, I need to get out of the house now and, you know, reopen government, we need to reopen America. Or you're somebody like me who's like, look, for the greater good, we need to stay in. We're all missing that element of connectivity. I think storytelling is the way that we strengthen our communities and each other. It's workable within these new confines. As for germ spreading, you know, like I mentioned before, so we'll socially distance, you know, everybody's 6 feet apart at least. And the part that I was going to talk about before I realized, like, hey, I'm jumping the gun, to further prevent the spread of germs, and because it's a totally unplugged show, to substitute as a microphone, or take the place of a microphone, everybody is encouraged to bring a receptacle of some kind. So like an empty aluminum can, you know, you just some refried beans or Bush's beans or whatever you had, you know, empty all that out, clean it, and then that's going to be your microphone. And you talk into that. And what that does is it condenses your voice. It'll still be the same volume and people will still be able to hear you, but it'll condense your voice. It's a fun, cute, quirky gimmick. And also all of your germs will just be going into the can. You know, people are also encouraged to bring a wine glass, you know, or a travel mug, something with, you know, something that's a cup that you can speak into that will condense your voice. I think it would be just a really fun time. And this whole thing is the brainchild of me and Christy equally. And I'm sure we're not the only ones thinking of something like this. I know lots of comics are thinking, at some point we're going to have drive-in comedy shows and drive-in concerts and everything. And, you know, why not have this as well? Because this is, because first of all, what's great about this type of storytelling show is that it stays small. It would be limited to a group of maybe a dozen people at most. And the idea is that we would get, splinter groups. Other people would see what we're doing and start their own thing. And it would just be this sort of like, what would you call them? Like renegades or some kind of, I don't fucking know. It's something that people need. People need stories. And yeah, I think like we also still don't know what we're going to call this. The name of it has yet to come to me. But I'm hoping to get the first show set up sometime in the coming week. Even if it's just like four or five people, I think it'd be worthwhile. I think people would be interested because everybody's got a story to share. Like, no matter how dull you are, you do have memories and you can talk about them. And even if you fail to mention really any detail, you still have something, and it's something that you can work on. Instead of like one reason that I feel overall not depressed and like I'm not going insane, is that I've been doing all this podcasting and I've been speaking, and I feel really comfortable speaking now at length. And a lot of that is just that I realized, like, look, I am my own. We are all our own people. That's why, I don't know, that's why anything, but yeah, like I've noticed just how much less I give a shit, about like being, in terms of being afraid. Like, I don't really have any fear. I think that's just because of all these, because I'm constantly talking and I'm thinking about things that happened, memories and cherishing them. So that's what I'm working on right now. To stay sane. And I think other people would stand to benefit from it if they tried it themselves. I remember back, I don't know how many episodes ago it was, but yeah, it's like when I was talking about the word of the year being unprecedented, I think one thing I mentioned in that is that we're going to see so many people start podcasts, because it's something you can do on your own, alone, and whenever the fuck you want. And sure, not a lot of people listen to all these, super amateur podcasts popping up, but it is something. It's like I know that my listenership on this isn't great, and like it bums me out a little bit. I wish I was more popular, but at the same time, I know I'm not for everybody. And so, and I mainly do this podcast for myself, and like anybody who feels compelled to listen to me and what goes on inside my head and just you know, they want to see, hey, what comes out of John Hanford when he's thinking just totally freely. You know, sure, like you talk to me in regular conversation and I just say something that seems, you know, pretty like, whoa, that was brash. That was pretty bold. And it seems like I'm thinking freely there, but the reality is like I'm very much captive by whatever situation that is, and that's what dictates my thinking. The situation that dictates my thinking right now is I'm home alone, quarantined, and I have a microphone in front of me, and I'm recording. So I'm completely in the moment here and just speaking whatever comes to my mind, whatever's going on with my speech function, that's what's coming out. And acid reflux. You know, thanks to the coffee. By the way, another thing that I've stopped doing, not stopped, but I've severely cut back on my dairy intake. I bought almond milk for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I've been having that in my coffee. And I gotta say, almond milk is fucking where it's at. Because it doesn't really add that much cream to the color of your coffee. But because like it basically, if you dump enough almond milk into your coffee that it looks, you know, that it looks like it would if you dump, you know, cream or milk into your coffee, then you've put too much almond milk in. But if you put just the right amount in, it'll basically look like a splash of milk and just add a really nice, you know, slightly nutty flavor to black coffee. And I've been drinking the Kirkland brand, you know, ground coffee from Costco. I bought a 3-pound thing of it just before, you know, just before Christy moved in with me. We hit up Costco, on our way back from LA, like after I picked her up in North Hollywood. We stopped off at a Costco and got like $300 worth of stuff that's still lasting me now, or still lasting us now. She's got stuff up at her new place. And yeah, I bought like the 3-pound canister of coffee for like $10, and it's good coffee, and it goes really well with a little bit of almond milk. That's the thing. You don't need that much of it. And cause like I used to think I didn't like almond milk because I was putting too much of it in my coffee. And that's the thing. Almonds they have a really powerful flavor that you only need a dash of it to make do. So even if you have no plans on going vegetarian or vegan or doing any of that in the wake of this pandemic, you know, I don't know exactly where I stand, but I think I'm done with factory farms, you know, like mass-produced meat. As far as steaks go, I think I'm only going, you know, grass-fed, locally sourced, open range. Like I think the Oregon country beef is still okay. But yeah, but mainly I'm cutting back on it a lot because it's, number one, it's bad for the environment. And number two, it's like, it's not really good for my health. So maybe that's the number one. I'm starting to be even more health conscious than I was before. Cause, I mean, yeah, if this virus has taught us anything, it's that you better have a strong immune system. You better know how to fucking take care of yourself so that you don't have an underlying condition. And if you do contract the virus, your body can fight it better. You know, and it is such a weird paradox to be, cognizant of, you know, of all those health implications and yet still have ice cream like every night the last 2 weeks, because that's what I've been doing. But I've also been thinking a lot about this. So yeah, whether you're actually thinking of changing your diet, give almond milk a shot and just put a splash of it in your coffee. Because I think you're going to find yourself with a new opinion of it. And possibly realize that, like, hey, maybe I don't need to buy milk that goes bad every, you know, after 2 weeks. Like, almond milk lasts for, I think, 2 months or so. I mean, at least the expiration date on my half gallon of almond milk is sometime in July. And, you know, I bought it early May. So, yeah, try it. And remember, just a little bit. Don't go too heavy on the almond milk. It's it'll overpower your coffee. It is very strong flavor, but it's good if it's just the right amount. And then also that makes you less wasteful. And you're actually gonna save money on coffee creamer, as well as your own bill of health probably. Like a gallon of milk is, I think, like $4 or something, $3.50 maybe, and a half gallon of almond milk is about the same price. However, you just don't even need half the amount of almond milk that you do of regular milk to make your coffee taste okay. And sure, maybe some of you drink black coffee, and that's fine. I like if the coffee is really good, I love a cup of black coffee. The fucking 305 Diner on Bainbridge Island, where my parents live, they've got the best fucking black coffee. Maybe not the best, but it's really good. And you know, I know that place. I like my coffee black. But usually, coffee isn't that good, and you do want some sort of creamer. And I'm all aboard the almond milk train. I think it's something that's I think that it's a good way to, it's a smarter use of your money and it's healthier. Okay. I think I got the point across. oh, Jesus Christ. I'm pretty impressed. I've been able to go 47 and a half minutes. That's not bad. That's pretty good for having seemingly nothing to talk about. Like when I started this, I've been doing more acid. I have not had any notes. I have not had any thoughts even going into this podcast. Everything has just been totally off the top of my head. I'm really pleased actually with how this has panned out. I can't tell. I think it's, I mean, obviously it's because I've been doing so much podcasting. Oh, here's something that happened. I did my first virtual comedy show this week. Tuesday night, I appeared on Mic'd Up NYC's Instagram, their live show. My friend Devin Nigro hosts that. And yeah, so they have a Tuesday night show. 8 p.m. Eastern time. I think I'm going to be on again this week. Not entirely sure, but it was a really good time. I hadn't done comedy since March 10th, and I had no expectations for myself whatsoever. I was just like, this is not good. This is not going to be a good show. I'm not going to do well, but, you know, whatever. I'm going to just try some new stuff that I've been working on, been writing about. And basically, I treated my set like a podcast, and it went over really well. I got a lot of laughs, laugh reacts in the comments. And I made my friend Devin laugh quite a bit, because he's the only one that I could hear during the, because it's an Instagram Live. And so it felt really good to make jokes and have people watch. Cause the whole thing was just a long form Helen Keller joke. Yeah, and I made it relatable to, or I made it, you know, relevant to today, because that was the thing. I felt like my entire act that I'd written before was just totally irrelevant. That's very clearly based in the past life, and so yeah, so that filled me with a lot of gratitude. I became grateful for just this forced evolution that I that I'm going through, and that we all continue to go through, if we choose to look at it that way. You can either choose to look at it as a major inconvenience, or find some way to make the best of it. And maybe it's easier said than done. I just happen to be really good at making the best of fucking crises. Like, I'm just good at that. You know, and you know, sure, Christy has done astrological readings for me and tarot readings, and one of the things that she brings up is that since I am a Capricorn rising, that's my ascendant sign, that people with that sign are typically really good at crisis management and you know, overcoming big obstacles to achieve their goal. And then obviously my, my sun sign is Aries, and Aries are known for, being trailblazers and carving out new paths. And that's definitely something that I've done, throughout my life. And I mean, just look at my entire history, and that is so fucking true for me. And both those things are true. The, you know, being a trailblazer, being good in the face of adversity or in a crisis, I know how to keep my shit together. And so, yeah, it probably is a little easier said than done. I know a lot of people that are struggling immensely with this, and some of them are suicidal, and I wish there was something that I could do, but I know there isn't, because ultimately it is up to each individual person to choose what it is that they're gonna do. How do you react to, how do you deal with the situation you're in? My automatic impulse is, well, I got to create something. And as long as I'm creating something, everything's fine, and I'm doing my duty to life, you know, to society, to the universe, to God, or whatever the fuck you want to call it. As long as I'm making something that is done out of love, I feel like I feel like I'm going to be okay. So yeah, that's, I think, a really good way to end this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, and maybe I'll have some more insightful shit next week. I hope so. Probably do. I got a lot up in here. Take it easy, guys. Stay safe.